very happy to introduce our first speaker, Katie F. from the Atlantic Group in Manhattan.
I'm Katie, I'm an alcoholic. I am so honored to be here today. I'm so terrified as well. But you know, I heard something in a meeting just the other day, and it's funny how we hear exactly what we need to hear when we hear it sometimes. And I was listening to the speaker, and they said, you know, they were nervous too, and they were talking about how it didn't matter if they messed up, and it didn't matter what they said, because they knew that every single person in the room wanted the best for them. Whether they liked them or not, whether they knew them or not, they just wanted the best for them. And that helps me tremendously to remember that today. The book says that we're like passengers of an ocean that have survived an ocean liner. We're all drawn together, and our fellowship holds us together, and our higher powers keep us together. And I'm just so happy to be here today. The Atlantic Group is my home group. I have a sponsor named James. My sobriety date is May 17th, 2004, so I had 4 years last month. Thank you. I'm on step 9. I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. And as far back as I can remember for my entire life, I absolutely hated myself. Even as a little kid, I just hated myself. I hated the way I looked. I hated the way I talked. I hated the way I moved. If there was something to hate about myself, I just didn't like it. And I was that kid in school where on Fridays, right before the bell rang, I would, you know, I'd raise my hand. I'd say, "Teacher, you forgot to give us homework." And then everybody'd throw a pencil at me, and, you know, rightly so. And so about the time when I was 10 years old, I discovered the white Zinfandel wine in the box in my parents' refrigerator. And I would get home from school about 2 hours before my parents would get home from work, and my parents had shrimp cocktail glasses in the cabinet, and I would take one down, and I would go to the refrigerator every day, and I would fill it up with the pink white Zinfandel, and I would go into the TV room, and I would watch my TV shows, and I'd drink my wine. And I remember that feeling, that wonderful, the warmth that goes down your chest, and it hits that button right there, and it like flies out to your fingertips. And then, you know, it didn't matter that the kids at school made fun of me. It didn't matter that my parents fight. God was in his heaven, and I was watching Fraggle Rock, and everything was great. You know, alcoholism, it's a progressive disease, and I drank all throughout grade school and into high school, and I always drank alone, I always drank in front of the TV, and the only thing that changed was the size of the cup. So I started with the shrimp cocktail glass, and I went to the 32-ounce extra value meal Taco Bell cup. And, you know, my parents were just kept replacing that wine in a box, and, you know, I had terrible grades as a result. My parents would always brag to their friends, "Wow, Katie goes to bed at 8 o'clock every single night. We're so proud of her." I was passing out. So I never got any homework done. I was failing out of high school, but in high school, I found out that I had a real gift. I found out that I could sing. And so I auditioned for a bunch of music schools, and I got some scholarships to music schools. And so my teachers all passed me. If you looked at my report card, it was like D-, 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 A in music class, D-, D-, math. And I went on to college. And when I was in college, I dropped 60 pounds. I met some other people, and it was the first time in my life where I knew that other people like drank too. And so I got together with them, and I started drinking with them, and I had arrived. I felt, you know, I felt important. I felt popular. On the inside, I felt really terrible still. I still absolutely hated myself, but I learned how to hide it, and I learned how to look good while I was doing it. And right out of college, I got the dream job that I wanted. I went on audition for an opera company. I got the job, and it was a great job. Like, they drove me around in a car, and I worked about 20 hours a week, and I sang at schools, and a few times a year I get to sing in the big productions and wear pretty dresses, and I felt really good. I felt really important. I didn't feel good about myself, but I felt good about where I was at. And it was that time that I discovered my bar. Oh, I love this bar. And I would go there every night after rehearsal and just look forward to going to the bar. And there was this guy at the bar, and he was like the mayor of the bar. And he had his own personal stool at the bar, and like he hosted the golf tournament at my bar. And so, of course, I had to be Mrs. Mayor of the bar. So, you know, I could not get up the nerve to ask him out on a date. So I developed this plan where I was gonna infiltrate his life, and I thought he needed a roommate. So I told him, I started going in every night, and I would say, you know, taxes are so high, and you'd really do well to get a roommate. And then I'd start planting little seeds like, oh wow, you know, rent's going up, and I really, you know, being a musician, I'm having a hard time paying the rent. And you know, I did this for a couple months, and all of a sudden one day it was like a light bulb went off in his head. He said, "Ping, Katie, why don't you move in with me?" I said, "I don't know about that. I'd have to think about that." And so I moved in, and one thing led to another, and he became my boyfriend. And but you know, my life started to get really small. I started going to the bar right after work, met him there. We drink, we go home, we drink, I go to bed, I get up, I go to work, I go to the bar. We drink, we go home, we drink, we go to bed, I go, you know, and that was my life. My contract with the opera lapsed, and I didn't think they were giving me quite the respect that I deserved. And with my vast array of experience. And so I found myself without a job, and there were these commercials on TV for back in New England for the New England Tractor Trailer Training School. And they had the best jingle. It was New England Tractor Trailer Training School. This is where you should be. And I thought, yes, that is where I should be. So I became a truck driver. And let me just tell you right now, if you are entertaining any ideas that life on the road is a glamorous life for a young lady like me, I'm here to put them to rest. Because it was a really tough job. The boxes are heavy, and people get mad at you when you drop things, and it's just, and I was dropping a lot of stuff because I wasn't always present at my job, if you know what I mean. I think y'all do. And so, yeah. Life got smaller and smaller, and I started having accidents in my car, and I started getting pulled over, and I started talking my way out of it, but I started getting pulled over. And it was about this time that I got a call from my dad, and my dad said to me, "Katie, you know, your mom's really sick, and she's in the hospital, and you should go see her." And I didn't even, I said, "Okay, Dad, when I get a chance between truck driving and the bar, I'll go see her." You know, that's what I thought. And so, you know, about a week went by, my boyfriend turned to me and he said, "Didn't your dad say that your mom was sick?" And I said, "Oh, yeah." So I went to the hospital, and she was in the ICU unit, and I had no idea. And I walked in, and my mom was in a room, and she was tied to the bed, and she was swollen, and she was yellow, and she had a tube down her throat, and she wasn't awake. And I said to the nurse, "What's happening?" And she said, "Your mother has alcoholic pancreatitis, and she's not doing well. So you need to talk to her." So, you know, I went and I said what I could say, but I just didn't know what to say at this point. And my mother got sicker and sicker. She was on life support for about 3 weeks, and then we took her off, and she died. And, you know, in the big book, it talks about how Bill Wilson went to this graveyard, and he saw this gravestone, and it said, "Here lies a soldier who died from drinking." And he saw that, and he touched something in him, and it scared him, but he kept on drinking anyway. And when my mother died, she had started drinking way after I had started drinking, and it scared me to death to see her die like that, just in an ugly, painful way. And I wanted to stop drinking, but I found that I couldn't. It was just too much not to drink anymore. And so I drank for a year and a half after my mom died. Right after my mom died, the relationship broke up, and I found myself alone and no job, no money. In this apartment, you know, I had to move out of my house into an apartment, and I just kind of hold myself up and waited to die. And it all happened so fast, and you know, I had set up this house of cards, and they all fell right down on top of me. And you know, I lost all hope in my life, and I really thought there was nothing that could help me. And one day I got a call from my voice teacher, and he said, you know, this guy's doing a show. They'd love to hear you sing, and they're very interested in you. And so I had been drinking and smoking for the past year, and I hadn't sung a note. And so I was not in peak, you know, performance condition. But, you know, I thought, this is gonna save me. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to get this job. So I go, and I audition for the guy, and I did not sound my best. And the guy said to me, you know, you're really not what we're looking for, but we could give you a part in the chorus. And I said, and my immediate response was, no, you know, because I'm not a chorus singer. I'm the soloist. And he said, and we pay $500. And I said, I'll take it. So, you know, and I didn't want to do it, and I was so embarrassed, but I had no money. And so I went to the first rehearsal, and who was there but this woman I had gone to college with? And she was the mess. She was the one we all worried about. She was the one who got in trouble, and the police had to come, and we'd pour in a cab and all shake our heads and look at each other and say, she needs to go to AAA. And so she was at this rehearsal, and I saw her, and she looked fantastic. She looked so good, and she looked so happy, and I found out she got my part, and I hated her. She got what I wanted. And so, of course, I walk up to her. I'm like, how are you doing? It's so great to see you. You look so great. And she said, I'm doing pretty well. You know, I've straightened some things out. And I said, no, what, really, what are you doing? And I don't know if she saw the desperation on my face or what, but she said, Katie, I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. My life has never been better. And I looked at her, and I said, I think I need a meeting. And the words came out of my mouth, and I didn't even think them. I didn't even say them. They just came out of my mouth, and they hung in the air like a neon light, and I was mortified. And I don't know where it came from. And she lit up, and she's like, oh, absolutely, I'd be happy to help you out any time. And I just wanted to crawl under the bench and be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just lied to her. And so, you know, for about 2 months, every night I would talk to this woman, and I would tell her the same three stories over and over again. You know, I should have been a contender. You know, my mom's dead and my boyfriend's left me. And she's like, I know, I know. And she was so nice and so helpful. And she just shared her story with me over and over again. And finally, one day, she took me to my first meeting. And it was at New Boat West. And I walked in and I felt terribly uncomfortable. I just had an audition and it went terribly. And we sat down and they said, is anybody visiting from out of town? And I raised my hand and I said, I'm Katie and this is my first time. And everybody started to clap for me, and they clapped, and they clapped, and they clapped. And, you know, I believe that God speaks to us through other people, and I guess I just hear applause. And feel free at any time. Thanks. I know that was kind of gratuitous, but so they started clapping for me, and for just a little window in my heart opened up, and I thought, you know, maybe there's something for me in this. And then I'll never forget, in the bathroom after the meeting, my friend was standing behind me. I was looking at her in the meeting, and I had told her earlier that day, I am going to drink tonight. I'm just checking this out. I don't even know if this is for me. And so after the meeting, I'm looking at her in the meeting, and I said to her, you know, I'm going to try. I think this might work. And I felt this overwhelming sense of peace just flow into me. And that was May 17th, 2004, and I haven't had a drink since. And thank you. And I guarantee you, it's not me. It's my higher power and the people in this program who've done that for me. I have had the personality change that the book talks about in the spiritual experience. And, you know, I used to get into fist fights with waiters. And that's another story for another day. But and through the steps is the only way that I knew how to do it, because if I kept doing the same thing over and over again, I was going to keep doing the same thing. I had an incredible experience with my third step. I had come in and I got to a point where I had a higher power, but it wasn't really formed. And I got to the third step and I told my sponsor, you know, I don't know if this third step is, I'm ready for it. You know, I really, and she said the best thing. She said, you know, it's not about turning your will and your life over to God. It's about making a decision to turn your will and your life over to God. So that means just keep going through the steps. So she took me to St. Patrick's Cathedral, and there was a wedding rehearsal going on that day. And we got to the part in the book, and it was like a movie. I was kneeling with her, and right when the prayer started, the organ started to play my mother's favorite hymn. And I just knew I was in the right place. And I keep having those experiences along the way when things get hard or when things get confusing. I just keep hearing exactly what I need to hear. I was horrible to my parents. I was terrible to my dad. And, you know, before I came in, he wrote me this letter. It was about 4 pages long. And the first line said, "Katie, I have tried to love you so much, and I just can't do it anymore." And it was 4 pages of what I had done to him, and every single word was true, and I could not deny it. And after I came in, I went to do my 9th step with him, and I planned this whole weekend, and I went out there, and I chickened out. And he was driving me back to the bus station, and I'm in the car with him, and right before I opened the door and I turned to him, I said, "Dad, there's something I gotta tell you." And I poured my heart out to my dad, and I did my 9th step to him, and I was crying. I was like, "Dad, can you, you know, do, I'm so sorry." And he looks at me and he goes, "Apology accepted. Have a nice trip back." So I go, "Okay, Dad, thanks." And I get on the bus, and I'm sitting on the bus, and I'm like, "Wait a second, that did not go as I planned it." And the book says that it rarely does, but so I'm on the bus, and I'm thinking about it, and I was like, "Eh, you know, I did it. I never have to do it again." And about a week later, my dad sent me an email, and it said, "Katie, I'm so proud of you." And it was the antithesis of that letter that I had gotten from him. And, you know, I don't forget about the past. I remember that person I was, and, you know, my dad doesn't either. But I can use that experience today to help other people. And I was, you know, I was so mean to my mom. I was so awful to her. I would even say I was abusive to her. But, you know, I'm useful today. And that's something I wasn't before. I was in my room drinking and watching TV, and I was helping nobody. I wasn't even helping myself. And today I have an opportunity that if I'm in a meeting and someone comes up to me and they say to me, "You know, I can't stop drinking. I'm worried about my kids." I can say to them, "You know, I can help you. I used to drink too, and I can show you how I did it. And my life is different today." And I'm just so overwhelmed. I'm so happy today. If you had told me that it would be possible for me to be happy, I would have told you that you are out of your mind. I thought it was just a way I was wired. I just thought it was the way that I was meant to be. And it's through taking opposite actions and listening to things that I don't believe in that I have been able to change. And I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams today. I guarantee you that I do. My wildest dreams are that I am insanely rich, I have a gorgeous husband, and I have this incredible singing career. I don't have any of those things. I'm not even close. I had to pin my jacket together today. But thank you, Helen. But the part that's beyond my wildest dreams is that even though I don't have any of those things, I am happy today. And if you had told I never thought that I would be able to be happy without any of those things. I had to have all of those things to be happy. And the funny part is that back then, if I had had those things, I wouldn't have appreciated it, and I wouldn't have known what I had. And today, you know, I see joy in things that I never would have seen joy in before. My home group went to the aquarium at Coney Island yesterday. I made fun of people who went to the aquarium at Coney Island. And I'm that person. I was getting all excited because it was like a walrus birthday, and it was such a good time. And I know, who am I? I have had a personality change. But today, my life is so good. I'm so happy. I'm so glad to be here. If you're new, keep coming back and talk to people. You don't have to get it right away. You don't have to understand everything I'm talking about. But if you keep coming back and you do what the book tells you to do, and you do and you accept help from other people, I guarantee you, you will be happy someday. So thank you.
Speaker Peggy B. from the Victory Group in Staten Island.
I'll give you the minute. Absolutely, thank you. Hi, my name is Peggy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so grateful and humbled to be here today, sober, and know that at this moment, this is exactly where my God wants me to be. You know, and I spent a very long time running from, running to, running away from, and not knowing where I fit in anything. And alcohol made all that go away for me for a long time. And where do I begin? I love when speakers get up and they have this quick, witty, funny thing to say. That's not me. and you know, my husband, who's here today, I just want to thank him for bringing me here and for being there for me on Father's Day. And we left our three girls home, and he's here with me today and gave up. So I want to thank you, Mike. So I got back from California yesterday. I was out there for a few days. My nephew, my family lives out in San Diego, my brother and his wife and kids. And my nephew graduated from grammar school, so I decided, you know, let me take the trip out there and be there for them and support them. And I got to spend some time with my brother, and we went to this bookstore in the Seaport over there, really nice. And he brought a book for me, and he signed it, and he gave it to me the night I was leaving. And I decided on the airplane, you know, let me read a few pages of this book and read what he wrote. As I got on the plane, and it was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And he signed in the book, great to be spending time now with you. And it was so profound, and it touched my heart, because if it wasn't for AA, I would not have cared about my nephew or his graduation, or showed up, or made the plane, or made the arrangements to get the plane, you know, because everything was all about me, you know. So what a gift to have received that from my brother and be there for my family and be able to show up and support them. And my, you know, my nieces and nephews, they never saw me drunk, and that's a gift. So a little bit about myself. I started drinking at a young age. I have three older brothers, and they partied, and I couldn't wait to grow up and party. I really never knew where I fit in anything. There was a lot of crazy stuff went on in my house, a lot of insanity. And I used to talk about all that when I first got to AA. And, oh, did I say my sobriety date and stuff? No. My sobriety date is September 8th, 1990. And for those young ones out there, I've never had a legal drink. I got sober a month before my 20th birthday. And this is where I belong, and this is where I've stayed. So you don't have to go out there and test the waters. Just see me after the meeting. So I was young, and I used to share all about that when I first got to AA, about my family and what it was like growing up. And, you know... And a lot of people go through stuff like that, I've realized. And a lot of people go through life, you know. And a lot of people, you know, drink for different reasons. But it's what drinking did to me, you know. It's not about how I grew up, because since I've been in AA, I've met all different people from all different walks of life, all different nationalities, all different colors, you know. Some grew up great, some grew up poor, rich, and in between. And we all drank. You know, so today I talk about the disease of alcoholism and how it affected me, you know, and looking back in hindsight. And, you know, when I started drinking, you know, that feeling of I had arrived was just from the very start. You know, I was very shy. You wouldn't know that because I put up the show. I wore a lot of masks, I like to say, and depending on the crowd I was in front of, because inside, nobody knew what was really going on. Inside, I was scared to death. Nobody liked me. God was for everybody else, not me. I went through Catholic school, and I believed in God, and I had a belief in God, but I thought that I chose to live away from the life that God wanted me to live, so that God was for everybody else and not me, you know, and I thought very low of myself. And when I drank, nothing mattered. Nothing mattered what was going on home. Nothing, you know, I fit in. It was like that feeling of, that's what I got when I drank, you know. But that feeling didn't last, and I chased it. you know, because by the end of the night, I was falling down. The makeup was all over the face, you know. One minute I was your friend, the next minute I wanted to fight you. You know, I'd go from bar to bar and, you know, bars that I tried to get into from such a young age. Like, I was walking in the bar on Forest Avenue, they'd be like, out. You know, and I just kept trying, you know. It was like the next level of progression. It started behind PS19 with a quart of beer, you know, and it progressed to Pathmark parking lot and the woods behind that. And then I made it up to Forest Avenue on the guardrail, and then I was trying to get in that bar across the street, you know, and they just wouldn't let me in. And the day that they finally let me stay, it was like, you know. It was a great feeling, you know. Now I didn't have to worry about the weather or anything. And, you know, yeah, nice and warm and toasty. And I love to drink. And I love the way it made me feel, you know. And my whole life revolved around drinking. And I never thought I had a problem because, you know, I still got up and did what I had to do. Most days. And, you know, that's the lie, the lies we tell ourselves, you know. I have credit cards, I'm young, I work. My friends were off to college. I lasted about 2 weeks in college and interfered way too much. You know, I had car payments to make. I need to work. I thought, you know, just the insanity. Everything revolved around alcohol, you know. And I worked and I made money and I just got by. And I was borrowing to get by. And, you know, and then I got this credit card for JCPenney's one time. And I said, I'll go to JCPenney's, I'll buy an outfit, I'll return it without the receipt, get the cash back, and I'm set for the night, you know? Never mind that the bill comes at the end of the month and I have to pay it, you know? These are the kind of things that I did. And you know, so my drinking progressed, and it started, you know, in the schoolyards, and I was young. I was in grammar school when I started drinking, and you know, like my friends, we'd all have our quarts and of beer, and they wouldn't finish theirs. I'd finish mine and finish theirs, and then I wanted more, you know. And they'd be going home, and I'd be like, come on, let's stay out a little bit longer. Let's go find some more booze, you know. I just always wanted more. And then when I got in the bars, it was, you know, what do you mean you can't serve me out? Just give me a beer. I'll put it in my jacket. Nobody will know. Just give it to me. Here's $10, you know. Because I just couldn't stop, you know. I couldn't stop. And I found dry goods on the way along there that helped me drink a little bit longer, and I thank God for them today because they brought me to my bottom quicker. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous and singleness of purpose. So my drinking progressed, and my oldest brother wound up in AA and through his use and abuse, and I compared. You know, he's older than me, I'm younger. He did this, this, and this. I didn't. You know, I'm fine, I get up, I do what I have to do. But, you know, the seed was planted, and it was chipping away at all those defenses I had, you know. And all those masks I wore for so long just weren't working out anymore. You know, I'd make these great plans, you know, like the other speaker was talking about. You know, I had this boyfriend at the time that I had this plan, you know, and he just wouldn't follow the script, you know. So here I am, and I'm, you know, I'm this devoted girlfriend who cheated whenever she drank, and, you know, and he wasn't showing up on time, and he wasn't doing this, he wasn't doing that, and it was poor me, and I'll show him, and that's how I live most of my life, you know. But at the end, you know, the more I focused on everything else and everybody else and the smoke screen I held up, just don't look at what's really going on, because I don't know how to live without my alcohol anymore, but it's causing problems now. And I just, I don't, you know, I don't know why, but the last time I drank before AA, because I did drink once I got to AA, it was a Sunday. I had been out all weekend, spent all my money. I was just kind of like, you know, that coming to feeling that you have. I'm on the couch in my parents' house, and my brother walked in, and he had a few months sober, you know, the buns and rolls for Sunday dinner, and there I am on the couch, you know, and he said, how you doing? And I went, not good, I don't know what to do anymore, you know, and I was 19, well, I was 18, because when I first got to AA, I was 18 years old, and I wanted to die, and I couldn't see anything to live for, and I, you know, I had the rest of my life ahead of me, and I felt old and used. My way was not working, you know, anymore. And I reached out for help, and he brought me to my first meeting, and I sat through that meeting and cried the whole time. I wound up in this room with all these old people, you know, and, you know, can't even last out there a few more years like they did. I wound up in here now, you know, just like, so I came to AA and, you know, in the back of my mind, I thought, well, you know, if it's not the alcohol, then it's because I'm crazy. Like, underneath it all, I thought there was something wrong with me. And today I know, yes, there is. I'm an alcoholic, you know, plain and simple. And with and without without a drink, I can act alcoholically. And I spent the next years in AA, and I did service, and I got a sponsor, and I made a lot of meetings. And my life started getting better and better. And I met a man, and I got married. I had 3 beautiful children in the home and the dog. And, you know, and I come to 10 years sobriety, and I started really struggling within myself. Because I made the meetings. I changed the people and the places and the things. But I really, and I would go to therapy every now and then. Like, you know, me and my husband would have a problem. And I'd be like, we need marriage counseling. Because you're just not doing it my way, you know? He just wouldn't get with my program. And poor Mike, I'll forget the amends I had to make there. You know, but it's all good today. We're married 15 years. What a gift. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, teary. And I no longer cheat. Never cheated on Mike, and it's real, you know. But so I'm struggling, and I'm telling myself, like, that old thinking is just like going, you know, you're so unworthy. Your family would be so much better off without you. Look at you. Why don't you just drink or end it all? And that's with 10 years sobriety, you know. And so I ran back to therapy, who sent me to the psychiatrist, who put me on medication because he said I was in a depression. I started making meetings. I doubled up on my meetings, and I started making some different meetings because I needed to make meetings separate from him because, you know, I can't, you know, because he was really most of the problem, so I thought, you know. And, so I wound up in the Victory Group. And this guy that I knew for a long time throughout my sobriety, that I, you know, you watch people through your sobriety, and he's, you know, was a big meeting maker also, and he was talking about the work and the big book, and I'm like, oh, they got him, the poor guy, you know, and because I did everything to avoid that book and those steps. I don't know why. I mean, I'm in AA, they're hanging in every meeting I go to, you know. But I was going to work an individual program and do it my way because I did get here so young and I was only a little bit alcoholic, you know. And so I reached out to him because no matter what, you know, I knew again in AA my way was not working and I needed more. And he guided me gently to the book and through the steps. And I'd show up weekly at his table and we'd sit down and we'd talk about it. And I'd say, but I don't get this, but I don't get that. And he gave me that set aside prayer, you know, set everything you think aside. I was trying to fix my sick self with my sick self, and it just wasn't working, you know. And I got to that point where I said, you know what, and I stepped away from it, you know, because I got very frustrated and I got full of fear. You know, if I change, if I let go of everything I think and I give it all to God, then what's left? I'm going to get hurt. You know, I'm going to be alone, you know, full of fear, you know, fear, all over my fourth step, you know. And I went back to him and I said, listen, I need help. I can't do this. Would you work with me again? And actually, he wasn't my sponsor the first time. I had a sponsor who was wonderful and helped me so much, but never went through the work. So I was seeking someone out to bring me through the work, and I found him. So at this point, I asked him to be my sponsor. You know, I had to put my faith in something, you know, and I put my faith in this program and in him to lead me, you know, to my God. And And I went through the program of recovery as outlined in the big book. And so my first half of my sobriety versus the past few years, no comparison. You know, me trying to make a plan of what I was going to say when I got up here, you know, it's laughable, you know. And I kept trying to, you know, all right, God, just give me the plan of what you want me to say. If you want me to come to this thing and speak at it, give me some words of wisdom here. And nothing was coming through. There was no, like, no outline, no nothing. I had to get up here and speak from my heart. And, you know, so that's my story. You know, that's how I got to AA. That's my experience in AA. I worked the program. I try to live in 10, 11, and 12. Try to pass it on. I have sponsees. I have a commitment. I have a home group. I have a sponsor, another thing that me and my brother were talking about on this trip was the older we get, the less we know, you know, and may I always remain teachable in AA, you know, and teachable in my spirituality, because when I let those little things get in, and those little things, when I think I'm justified, you know, to feel a certain way, I know I'm wrong, you know. I love this program. I love what it's given me, you know. And my sponsor, you know, he really, I went to him for everything, and he guided me through this work, and now we talk here and there, you know, when I struggle with something, so he could laugh at me, you know, and we talk, and the network of people I have around me, people that are living this program in their life, it's just unbelievable, you know. Like right now, I feel like that Verizon person. You know, like I'm on my phone and I got AA behind me, and you know, and what a difference from the kid who got here and felt all alone in this world, you know. And today I'm able to embrace my family. Like AA became my family for a little while, and today I embrace my family and the relationship, the amends that I've made there, and the relationships I have with. Each person in my family is just incredible, you know. And my grandfather got to AA, and he struggled. He struggled, and he wound up dying from cancer, which gave my mother awareness of recovery. And she was able to help my brother, my oldest brother, and direct him to AA. And my oldest brother directed me to AA, and I was able to direct another brother of mine into AA within the past couple of years, and now I'm watching him grow in his program and his fellowship down in Florida on Boca Raton he is. And, you know, it's amazing to be able to watch a light bulb go off in other people. You know, it's amazing that I show up at a meeting and it's not all about me. You know, I apologize, you know, all the nights that I showed up. You know, my first experience with the steps, this is funny. My first experience with the steps, I was sober like a month or two, and, you know, there was a beginning meeting, and following the beginning meeting, there was a step meeting, and I said, oh, let me stay, let me see what this step thing's all about. And I don't know what they were talking about. All I heard was making amends for things you did wrong, and I went home and told my boyfriend how I cheated on him and with who, and... So for the next 2 months, I cried in AA about my boyfriend left me, I did what you people told me to do, and he left me, you know? And now looking back, what a gift that was, you know. 1 minute. My bright ideas, boy, you know. My sponsor will say to me, you might want to rethink that, you know. And how's that working for you? You know, and I hear him in my head all the time. So half the time, I don't even have to call him anymore. You know, and I'm like, I know, read this page, do this, do that, you know. And what a gift it is to really feel a part of something. And, you know, my friends, they keep me humble. I went on a retreat, and last year I had talked in my little small group about this book, Drop the Rock, you got to get it, great book, da-da-da. And I go home the next year, I go back, my group of friends, and they're saying, people are grabbing me, women are grabbing me, going, that book you talked about last year, I got it, we have a group, we read it every week, and blah, blah, blah. And my friends are going, oh, hail Peggy, and they're goofing on me, you know. And the funny part was I had to finally grab one of them and go, listen, I didn't finish the book, you know. So I dusted it off, it's on my bedside bureau, and I'll pick it up here and there and read it. But it is a great book, Step 6 and 7. If you want to check it out, and I want to thank you for listening, and I thank AA for my life.
And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our third speaker, Richard P. from Strictly Alcohol in the Bronx.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Richard, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. You know, it's good to be here, and I want to thank the committee and thank, you know, you people for having me today. You know, my story is you know, it's a sad one, but it keeps me here because, you know, my life was over, you know. And, you know, I drink for a lot of years, but they say not how long you drink is what happened, you know. And when I came in here, when I finally got to AA, you know, my life was over. And, you know, and I'm glad. You know, I thank God every day for that, because without that, I would still be out there or probably be dead already. And I would have did some more suffering, you know. And it took me a long time, and I still tried to drink. You know, and I lost everything. I lost my family after 27 years, two daughters and a wife. After 27 years, I was down the drain and jobless, homeless. You know, I could hardly, you know, put two words together. You know, and I was a beer drinker for years. And I started late. I started 18. You know, but I feel right after that, about 2 years later, I think I had become an alcoholic already, you know, because I was drinking every day, all day. I couldn't stop, you know, and I tell people, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so what, you know? No, that was my thing. That was my thing, you know, and I didn't find out until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous what life really was about, you know, and I found out it was very simple. When I came in, I sit down, I finally put the cotton in my mouth and took it out of my head, put it in my mouth. I finally realized what it was really about. You know, and I listen to you people telling me, you know, how to live a day at a time. You know, stop. Don't pick up that first drink, and your life will get better if things didn't get better. So I ended up after all that time, you know, in and out of the hospital, trying to stop, still couldn't stop. And I got up one morning, you know, right before my wife kicked me out. You know, because I had gone to a couple of meetings, and I came back to the meeting I had gone to. You know, I didn't hear anything the first two meetings I went to. And I came back, and I told her, I said, well, the meeting I went to had moved. She said, well, since that meeting moved, you move. You know? So that's what happened. So I took up on it, and I moved. I moved in with a friend, and I've been knowing for years. You know, he had a five-room apartment, you know, people running in and out. He was getting, you know, everybody was getting drunk, and that was right down my alley. And so that didn't last too long, you know. And I've kept telling myself, if I get a job, I wouldn't be an alcoholic, you know. That was my thing. You know, I didn't know nothing about denial or any of that stuff. That was just the way my life was. And so I end up, you know, right before that I had, you know, I got thrown out of my apartment. I had one kid, and you know, I didn't see it. I just couldn't see it. That was all right, you know. Big shot is my, I take care of that. My wife take my daughter and moves them to her father's and mother's house. I was at work. I came home. You know, I came, and she called me at work and told me what happened. I said, don't worry about it. We get another apartment. You know, she took what she could and went over. I lost everything. She took what she could, you know, with the kid and took over mother's house. So I ended up from work, getting off from work. I got there home about 4 o'clock in the morning. I just walked in the door like it was mine. You know, like nothing happened. Nothing happened. In the father's house, like nothing happened. They welcomed me in, you know. And my father-in-law had cases of booze that he had from the 40s, you know. And I, you know, and that was right down my line. Right down my line. So right after that, you knew I didn't have a job because he had all the booze I need. So why go to work? You didn't have free rent. You didn't have no booze. You had all the booze you needed. So that's what happened. You know, so I moved right in, like I was at home, couldn't work, got to the point that I couldn't work, got sick, you know, in and out of the hospital. So I finally ended up on welfare. So I had to go downtown one morning, and by that time, I was just about 10 years later. I would move in, you know, for about a couple of weeks, then I get an apartment, but I stayed there for about 12 years. You know, I could not get out of that house. And I got stuck in that house for about 10 years. The only thing I could do was drink and throw up. Drink and throw up every morning, all day. So that's when my wife got tired, you know, and threw me out, which was great. I appreciate it. So I had to go downtown for examination. And I got down, because I couldn't ride a train for years. And so I end up taking the train down that morning, and I couldn't drink. Because at that time, I was drinking 24 hours a day. And I could not drink. So I end up downtown that morning. I gave up, you know, we had given urine blood, so you can't drink because you know it's going to show up, you know. So as I was laying on the table taking the exam, the nurse called the doctor, and she told him, say, he's having a heart attack. So the ambulance came and took me over to the hospital. I was in the hospital for a month. I walked out of that hospital, and before I got out there, about a block away, I picked up a six-pack of beer. And I said to myself, if I had drink that morning, I wouldn't have had the heart attack. You know? That's what my sick mind told me. So anyway, I end up out there another year. And every morning before I go to work, I would go downstairs and get 40 ounces of beer. You know, then I get on the train, I get another one, I get off. Sometimes I get off in between. You know, and then I get to work, I drink all day, come home and drink all night. And I did that for about a year. And I got sicker and sicker. So one morning I got up and I know my life was over. So the only thing to do was to go upstairs and jump off the roof. So my friend looked at me and said, what's the matter? I told him, I said, I can't drink. So he said, you know, and there's nothing else I could do. So he said, now, so I end up in the hospital. So I end up in an outpatient clinic, and I talked to the lady. She said, well, you know, you're physical and mentally sick, so your best bet is just to go to, so I end up in a detox. So when I got there that morning, that detox, the guy told me I could stay. I had relief. That was relief. And I haven't felt the way I used to feel since that day. And that was April the 15th, 1990. And my life changed completely. You know, thank God for AA. When first night I was there, a guy walked in from AA and he said, you don't have to live like that. He said, you don't never have to live like that unless you pick up a drink. So he said, the first drink gets you drunk. And I looked at him, I thought he was nuts. So I said, because the first thing that my head, one drink never made me drunk, but he didn't say that. You know, he didn't say that. He said, the first drink gets you drunk. Set off the compulsion, you know, you can't stop. And he said, it's a mental, physical, and spiritual disease. And that somebody was reading how it works, and that's what the first thing I picked up. You know, he was talking about people, places, and things. And they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who have thoroughly followed our path. You know, it says very plain. You know, and how it works. And that's what I hung on to, a day at a time, and been hanging on it to ever since. So I was there for 5 days. See, I started getting help right away. I was there for 5 days. Somebody asked, they told me about people, places, things. Don't go back home. You know, I ended up in a rehab for 28 days. Left there, was a halfway house. I left there, I went to Brooklyn. But I was making meetings on a daily basis. I'm making 6 meetings a day sometimes, because I had nothing else to do. They say, if you have nothing to do, do it in a meeting. You know, do it in a meeting. So that's what I did. Because, see, without my sobriety, I got nothing. And it was proven to me already. I have nothing without my sobriety. If I put anything before my sobriety, I will lose it. I've seen it. I've been here long enough to see it happen. You know? So I didn't put my wife, my kids, nobody before my sobriety. They said, you have to take care of yourself first before you can help anybody else. You know? So they kept it very simple. And to me, the program is very, very simple. You know, if I don't pick up that first drink, if I make meetings, I help another sick and suffering alcoholic, and I pray to God for help, I will be okay. Because I've done that since I've been in here, and I try to do it on a daily basis. You know, they said practice this program. And that's what I try to do to the best of my ability, and it works. You know, so I end up, and after, and I got into the steps. I got my sponsor, Mike, and I got into the steps. He used to be there every day for me, and I got into the steps. And I know I was insane because my whole life, I look back, it was trying to run on self-will. You know, it's very simple. I look back, my life was running on fear. It was based on fear and self-will. And I tried to do it myself and didn't know how. And so when I didn't know how, what happened? I drink. And it would happen like today if I don't come to meetings. I would get right back into self-pity again, you know, self-will. So I have to come to meet and get reminded. Like I heard when I first came in, I came for my drink and I stayed for my thinking. Every day I get up, I have to, you know, I don't get up and forget I'm an alcoholic because I've been doing it for a while. And that's the first thing come to my mind. And it keep, that's why I can't, forget the past. You know, I don't live in it, but I don't forget it. Because if I forget it, I'll be right back out there again. Oh, you all right? I'm all right. No, I'm not all right. I'm an alcoholic. You know, but my thinking has to change. Somebody was talking about the psychic change, you know. And today I don't try to run my life. Every morning I get up, I remember the third step prayer. Turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. You know, not as Richie understand, as I understand him, you know. So that's what I do on a daily basis. And I get in, you know, and I did the other steps. And I tried to practice them, not all day. I don't just live in a few steps. Try to live in all of them. And as the day goes by, they all shows up. Character defects and everything else. And, you know, and I only arrest them a day at a time. They don't go nowhere. They're there. But I don't act on them. You know, that's the thing. Today, I know I don't act out on those things because that's what's going to keep me here. You know, and after a while, you know, alcoholic like myself, my wife threw me out. I figured, well, you know, a couple of days, I done got sober for 2 days. Now I can run back in, and I stay in there, you know, and I'd be all right. You know, she'll let me back in. I get my foot in the door, and now I can start conning again. Because that's all it was. My whole life was based on conning, you know, trying to get over, not knowing I was getting over on myself. You know, that's all I was doing. I was getting on other people. I was getting over on myself, but I didn't have the knowledge to know that. You know, the program teaches me that. You know, honest, open, and willing. You know, it's all there. Like my sponsor told me, it's very simple, Richard. Just follow the script. Don't write it. Don't rewrite it. Follow it. You know, it's already written. All you do is just follow it. So that's what I try to do. And after a few years, I was going to be looking for my apartment, and my wife told me, you know, we were seeing each other. We never, you know, when I saw the kids and everything. And I made amends to my wife and kids, you know, and she told me, well, you know, after about 3 years, we moved back together. You know, and I've been together ever since. So in April, me and her just celebrated 45 years marriage. And really, it has nothing to do with me. You know, it has nothing, because I was blaming everybody and anybody, people I didn't know, people I didn't care about, people, you know, it was their fault. It was their fault, you know. And they all told me, said, no, Richie, look at yourself. You know, and it tells me, when I'm disturbed, you know, it's not you, it's me. All I have to do is look inside of me. Today, I can care about other people. They don't have to love me, but I can love them. That's the most important thing in my life. You know, people don't have to do things for me. I'm glad that I'm able to do things for them. You know, and that's what I like about this program. You know, it's not all about me. Like our old time always here said, get out of self. Cause, you know, I didn't know that until I came in here and I sit down and I listened. You know, it was all about me, but I had no clue because I figured I was helping this person, I was helping that person, but I was looking for something. Always looking for something underneath. You know, it didn't come out on top. I call this never come out on top. It always come under. And that's what I have to be careful of today. You know, I have to keep taking that inventory. Not yours, mine. Because, see, I'm good at taking yours. You know, I'm good at taking yours. What you should be doing, like I heard somebody say, you know, if you only act the way I want you to act, everything would be beautiful. You know, everything would be beautiful. It ain't like that. That's not life. That's not reality. You know, but that's my thinking. They told me it was upside down when I came in. And now it began to turn around a little bit. You know, so a day at a time, things got better. You know, and I got a job, which I love. You know, and I never loved to work. You know that. Never loved to work. But I got a job now. I love it. You know, it's about 400 or 500 kids. You know, little ones all the way up. You know, and they're very nice. And like I ain't never did like to be around too many people. You know, I was a bar drinker, but I always read in the corner. And so when I got now, I had to meet people every day. Every day. When the little kids come to school, they don't see me. They ask their mother, what happened to him? You know, like people say, I ain't never want to see him. They ask me what happened, you know. So, you know, and I got friends, and, you know, I got a lot of friends in this program. I got friends I never thought I would have. You know, they call me. I get phone numbers. And, you know, they call me. I call them. We hang out, you know, in ball games or, you know, things like that. You know, my life is great. My life is great. My wife is, you know, and that argument thing, too. I don't get an argument with people. I don't get an argument with my wife. It's senseless. If you're right, you're okay. If you're wrong, you're still all right. You know? I ain't got no problem with that, Mike, because that is a waste of time trying to tell somebody they're wrong. And when they go, you know, and my thing was try to prove, I'm going to prove you wrong. No. It's okay. It's all right. No problem. You know? And that's what I love about AA. You know, they say, wear your sobriety like a loose garment. And that's what I do. I come in here, I have a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun. I can laugh, I can joke, you know, and I can take a joke. You know, I don't have to be uptight. Because it tells me right there, we are not saints. You know, so I don't have to get that thing about, I ain't perfect, I ain't this, I ain't that. No, I'm not a saint. So you know right away. You know right away. This is who I am and this is all I am. And it's okay with me. You know, I don't have to run around trying to prove something. You know, it don't work anyway. You know, it don't work because then I'm going to start putting on. you know, acting like more than what I am or what I'm not. You know, because that ego thing goes both ways. I can see how bad it is for me. I can see how good it is for me. You know, so I have to keep that even thing. You know, just come and tell the truth. That's all I have to do, and I can live with myself. You know, I can live with myself. And that's, you know, that's the best thing that happened. It's an inside job. Not dress up the outside like I always did. You know, try to look good in front of people. You know, and then when I get home, I wonder what happened. You know, now I feel so bad, I got to go have a drink. You know, that was me. That was me, and that's why I have to take my inventory and look at the real true value of myself, you know, and really get real with me and what I can, you know, because, you know, the promises came true to me. Promises came true, you know. I'm getting ready to retire. I was going to retire last year. Everybody keep telling me. People on the job, they love me. They, Richie, don't say we need you. We want you here. And they really mean it. They don't mean that, you know, that old thing. And they show up. If I need anything, they go on the computer. We can tell me, do this, do that for you. You know, I ain't never had that in my life. Never. You know? And I don't go in there and say I'm in AA. Nope. I go there. I become workers among workers. And if somebody needs some help, I don't say. I just go there, what you need, I cannot help you. You know? And I'm not looking for nothing. You know? And that's what makes my life so good. You know? My family is the same way. My daughters, one is in North Carolina. The other one's here with two kids. I got two grandkids. I try to do anything I can for them. You know, I make amends every day. Every day. The way I live. You know, try to be there for them. And, you know, and try to be there for other people. Like I said, my life today is not about me. If I do what the book says and do what, you know, my higher power wants me to do, which it wants me to live free, happy, and joyous. Joy, happy, and free. You know, and I am free. Today I'm free. You know, I don't have that monkey, they say, that monkey on my back or that alcoholism on my back. I don't have it. Because when I got up this morning, I made a step meeting. You know, and I ask God to have all those character defects removed that might stand in my way of being useful to you and others. Simple as that, and go about my business. I don't sit around and worry about them. You know, worry don't get it. You know, like somebody asked me the other day, are you going to practice for this? I said, for what? All I have to do is go in and tell my story. That's it. You know, that's it. You know, that's... You know, and I thought I was going to be nervous. Everybody keep asking, are you nervous? I think I'm crazy. I don't think I'm nervous. I think I'm crazy. Because, you know, it hasn't happened. Usually I get up there, I get nervous, and it hasn't happened. So God must be somewhere doing something. And I appreciate it. So I want to thank everybody. Happy Hyper Fathers Day and Mothers, everybody. And thank you all for having me, and thank you for being here.